Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer? Where is it? Where's the hammer?
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. If you want to see the studio, I'm in the Chicago studios here at Relevant Radio today. And if you want to see a little bit of the studios, you can see it on my Twitter feed. Cyrus was kind enough to snap a picture. So you see little old me in the studio that I'm doing the show from right now. You can see what it looks like right now. We'll get a picture of Cyrus. Yeah, we will. Cyrus is shaking his head. No, we are going to get a picture of Cyrus up there at the next break. 888-914-9149 is the number. So as promised, we're going to go back to Chicago. Who knows how far away you are from me right now, Mike, but let's get back to your question about, you asked me, what did we do to try to help our kids follow along at Mass and get the most out of Mass when they were growing up, right?
Correct.
Okay, so I started by mentioning that we tried to make the experience at Mass distinct from coloring time or reading time because it was a way to let them know that even though, yes, we know you're little and you're going to be fidgety and distracted, we still wanted it to be different so that you knew you were there for something more than just coloring or reading. So I think where I left off was that we would have the little books about the Mass or about Jesus, about the saints. And so when the kids were little, we would let them look at those during Mass. But as they got old enough, and I think by old enough, what I mean is say about 5-6 years old, by that point, they had to pay attention. And so we made them pay attention. And if they were slacking off or looking around or falling asleep, we would say, hey, pay attention. This is what's going on. Part of that took the form, and I've seen other parents do this, and I really, it warms my heart when I see them do this, is they'll whisper quietly into the ears of their children sometimes and explain what's going on during the Mass. This is when Father is, he's going to take the bread and he's going to say the prayer, and the bread and the wine and the chalice are going to become the body and blood of Jesus. And I'm going to kind of narrate a little bit for them when it's appropriate. I remember many times, maybe before Mass started, looking around the church or asking my sons or daughters to look around the church, you know, quietly say, do you see where the angels are? Do you see where St. Joseph is? Where's Mary? Where's Jesus? And so that would get them in the habit of looking around and seeing these signs and symbols of the faith. And I think as they got older, I've been pleased to see now my adult children doing that with their children as well. Another thing would be to sit as close as you can, if it's possible, and it's not always possible, but sit as close as you can to the front where it's easier for the kids to see what's going on. Because when they're little, they can't see anything. All they see is, you know, the back of the people in front of them, or it's to me, it must be like standing in a forest and all you see are the trees around you. So it helps if you can have them close enough up to the front where they can see what's happening. And then lastly, even outside of Mass, trying to help them understand why Mass is a very special and important thing. And I like to promote good Catholic books and other activities for the kids so that they will learn this even when they're not at Mass. One resource that I've always had a lot of luck with for my grandchildren anyway is the materials that Holy Heroes puts out. Their website is holyheroes.com. And I know the people who own the company. I have no stake in it whatsoever, so there's no benefit to me. But I do really appreciate the high quality of the CDs, the stories about the saints, and they have many other things. And what we have found is that by plying the kids with this sort of thing, they actually look forward to Mass in some cases. And they want, you know, it's like, oh, this is what we've been reading about or hearing about. And they can make a deeper connection with Jesus and what he did for us and what's happening at Mass. So off the cuff, Mike, those are several things that we did when we were young parents. And, you know, I offer you that for your consideration.
Thank you so much. I mean, you definitely gave me a lot of takeaways. What I liked what you said was about differentiating Mass from other activities during the day, mm-hmm. you know, and during the week. So I definitely think I'm going to take you up on your advice of maybe bring in a child's book about a saint or something like that to bring along instead of like just some toy she already plays with in the car or whatever. So
right.
That was really helpful. And thank you for the Holy Heroes website recommendation as well.
Good. I think you'll find a lot of good things there, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you. You know, just as a quick aside before we go on, I mentioned the Cheerios thing, and I hope you didn't take it the wrong way, anybody. I'm not saying that, you know, you're doing something wrong if you bring a little baggie of Cheerios to keep your toddler quiet. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that we were trying to, as Mike just sort of restated it, we were trying to make the Mass and being at Mass different so that the kids would know this is something different. This is not snack time. This is not coloring book time. Even if we gave them stuff to color in, the point is to try to differentiate it enough so that even when they're very little, they realize that this is different and this is more solemn. How solemn can a three-year-old get, after all? But it was just a little tweak to try to help them make that connection in their little minds. And then as they got older, you know, we could be more specific about it. But that's what I meant about the Cheerios. Please don't misunderstand. If you're bringing a baggie of Cheerios to Mass with you, because that's what helps, don't think that I'm looking down on you or judging you. I'm certainly not. Not at all. Let's go to Kim now in Anaheim, the home of Disneyland. Hello, Kim.
Good morning. So I appreciate you taking my call. I have two adult children that have both strayed from the faith. Mm-hmm. My son is 22 and just moved home, and we've had a lot of discussion, and he has kind of stated that he, you know, does believe in God. He understands that God is like, helped direct him that he needed to move home, that, mm-hmm. you know, he does have a belief, but we got into it last night and about going to Mass. And I had honestly just begged God. I just wanted him to, that it not be a fight, that it be something that he wanted to do with me when he's home.
And how old is he?
Roof.
You say 22. He's 22. Okay.
And first couple weeks, yeah, he went, well, then he has plans Saturday night, and yeah, maybe I'll go, and, you know, and then it came out that, well, Mom, you know, I only go to Mass because it's for you. I don't get anything out of it. I never have. It's just, mm-hmm. I can have a faith without Mass. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had this talk, I can't even tell you how many times, and obviously what I'm saying isn't resonating. So I'm just wondering if you have any books, videos, talks,
okay,
that you'd recommend.
Well, obviously you can pray, and prayer is not just, okay, well, I can't do anything, so I guess I'll pray. Prayer is the most important thing you can do. It's the most proactive and powerful thing you can do. And I say all the time, and I'll say it again now, you have special standing before God when it comes to your relationship as mother to this young man. God chose you from all eternity to be his mother. And so because of this very noble and important task that God has entrusted to you, God also has a special attentiveness to your prayers as mother of this child. So please don't underestimate the power of your prayers, especially your prayers, because you're his mom. You have a special power, and there are special graces God will give to your son if you invoke them upon him. And not just once or twice, but make this a lifelong project. And, you know, maybe he will come back around sooner rather than later, please God. But even if he doesn't, just continue to pray for him in the spirit of St. Monica, who prayed for her son at St. Augustine. He was a wayward kid. He said exactly to her what your son has said to you. I don't need all that stuff. I don't need those things. I can still be a good person. And it turns out he was not a very good person in many ways. But his mother's prayers really, in the long run, are what brought him back. So don't let yourself get discouraged. One example of this Jesus gives us in the Gospels, he talks about the persistent widow. And I'm sure you know this story, Kim, where this widow is petitioning a corrupt judge for a ruling in her favor, and she just will not let this guy have any peace. She's constantly pestering him. And after a while, Jesus says, this unjust judge says, all right, already, I'll give you what you want. Just leave me alone, please. Now, this is an a fortiori argument that Jesus is making here, Kim, because what he's saying is, look, if even a sinner, even a corrupt judge who's not in it for doing the right thing, if even he will give this judgment in favor of the widow because she's petitioning him so relentlessly, how much more so will your Father in heaven do this for you who ask of him? So obviously God is good and wants to give you good things, and he loves your son even more than you do. He wants your son to be happy and close to him even more than you do, and you want that a lot, don't you? So part of this exercise in trust is also for your benefit too, that you've done the best you can. He's now 22. You can't force him to do anything. So I would just maintain this line of communication with him, keep talking about things, but in the background, keep praying for him. And, you know, I want to stop there only because if I don't, I'll wind up giving the talk that Josh and I had, that conversation, and I really want you to hear that. I think it's going to really complete the picture for you. So how about those thoughts to start?
Well, I was really hoping now for something like any video that I could say, would you please watch this? I fast weekly. I pray the rosary every day. I'm parked and waiting to go to mass.
I can give you 50 videos. Kim, I can give you 100 videos, books. If you have a notepad and a pen, let me give you some.
Here's the thing. I'm ready.
If your son is telling you right now, Mom, I don't want to go to mass. I don't believe in that. I don't need that. I'm not sure whether reading a book or watching a video will change that. But we can try, right? It's always good to try doing that. So I would give him a book called Surprised by Life. Now, complete disclosure, I edited this book, but the stories are all written by men and women who did not find their faith in Christ through the Bible or through the church fathers or anything like that. These are all stories of really amazing and amazingly bad situations that they went through that involve divorce and remarriage and drug abuse, abortion, sexual promiscuity. One of the authors of one of the chapters, she was a call girl, a highly paid call girl in San Francisco. She was never even a Christian. She had never been baptized. And she kept seeing, well, I won't tell you what the story is and how it turns out, but each one of these stories is very riveting and compelling. And they deal with these life issues, some of which maybe your son might recognize. And they all found faith in Christ. And the stories are very powerful. So that would be a book that he might find, even if he's not interested in the religious part of it, he might find the stories so riveting that he'll read them. That's, you know, certainly possible. I would recommend Father Mike Schmitz. He's got many different videos on topics like, well, why should I go to Mass? You know, why should I be a Christian? Why should I follow Jesus? And Father Mike Schmitz is not only very telegenic, but he's very intelligent, and he's got a great message, and he's easy to listen to, and he's compelling and convincing. And so if you just go to YouTube and type in Father Mike Schmitz, you'll find them there. Another person who's also there in the same, I think it might even be the same channel, is Jackie Angel. And she, sometimes by herself, sometimes with her husband, she's done a number of videos in which she talks about these things. And even though Jackie Angel's a little bit older than your son, she's still a young adult. And so she will, I think, speak to him as Father Mike Schmitz does in a language that he'll understand. So there's a good book, and there are a bunch of videos right there.
She used to sing he grew up when she was singing.
When she was
and
what?
Bobby went, she's, you know, she's a singer and performer.
Oh, you know Jackie. So she, okay. Okay.
I actually do, but, you know, it's sometimes when you're in distress, you can't think straight.
Right.
And okay, I will definitely, I think that book sounds, I think I might read it first and then give it to him. So.
Okay, yeah. And there are others. If his issue is God, I mean, if he's wondering about, well, why should I believe in God? I mean, when we have our next conversation, after you've shown him some of these things, let me know. Maybe we can fine-tune things a little bit more as needed. Well, thank you, Kim, and I will be praying for you. And just remember, everybody, Pleasure Drive is coming next week, but one of the things to look forward to is this new talk that is coming out. It's not really a talk, I shouldn't say that. It's a discussion that Josh and I had or about 45 minutes long, and in it we talk about this specific issue in depth with a lot of information, and that's coming. That'll be a digital download that you'll be able to get, and it's coming next week. So keep your eyes open for that. Keep your ears open for that. Let's go to Barbara now in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning. I wanted to add to the conversation about the home devices and St. Joseph.
The home devices?
I have a story. Yeah, like the Google Home.
Okay.
We have two of those in our house. One is actually in the house, and one's in a detached building. And last March, I consecrated myself to St. Joseph a year ago. And then my husband and I together were renewing consecration to St. Joseph on March 19th. And that morning, he was out in the detached building working, and I was in the house when I started having symptoms, and I used the device saying something's wrong, and he came in, and it turned out I was having a catastrophic stroke that could have ended my life had he not been able to reach. I couldn't see. I lost my speech became very slurred, and after he got in the house, I lost my left side. He was able to get me to the hospital very quickly. I was treated with the clot buster, and that night was... Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering, you started off wanting to talk about Google Home devices. Is your point that that saved your life?
Yes, because we have one in the house and one out in his office, and mm-hmm. I use that device to say, something's wrong, can you come in? And he mm-hmm. came in immediately because he could hear my voice, and he heard that I was slurred. And this was 7:45 in the morning, and he said it was substantially, my speech was altered, and that's what brought him in so quickly, because he could have been actually in a meeting.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that it worked out well. That's great. So... I want to say this the right way. Yeah, we have a break. Well, it sounds like you had another comment you wanted to make there, Barbara. I have to take a break, though. I'll be right back with more right after this. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values, and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Hello?
I have just one question for you. Are you ready?
Am I ready for what? Who's this?
Are you ready for
the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio?
I have the same reaction every time you play that. That poor woman. Am I ready for what?
The Patrick Madrid Show.
Oh, that poor thing. 888-914-9149. I'm broadcasting from our studios in Chicago. And if you want to see what that looks like, and also if you want to see a picture of Cyrus behind the controls, if you've ever wondered.
That's not me.
That's you. If you've ever wondered, you know, what does it look like in the studio and what is Cyrus doing and what does the control room look like? Well, you'll be able to see that. And my picture is up there now, but Cyrus's will be up in just a matter of moments. My Twitter feed is at Patrick Madrid. Cyrus, you like it when people follow you on Twitter too, don't you?
False.
Let's go to Bob in North Carolina. Hi, Bob. Welcome.
Hey, Patrick. I have something that's dividing my family a little bit.
Okay.
And I need to give you a tiny bit of background. We got a new pastor a couple of years ago, and he has had some really problematic homilies, but most of the time he points to something that's ambiguous.
Okay.
And so it's been problematic because I'm having to go, well, if Father meant this, you know, this is what he meant, because you could take it one of two ways. And he also has been kind of loose with the rubrics in places.
Okay.
But when COVID came and then we started to come back to Mass, he instituted, he would distribute Holy Communion, everybody else would, in masks and with gloves on, and we would just receive on the way out. And we could only receive in the hand.
And on the way out, this was not during Mass itself?
It was after Mass. You would receive Holy Communion after Mass. Now, that's since changed. They've taken the gloves off, and we receive during Holy Communion. But my son really desires to receive kneeling and on the tongue. which he will not allow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of dividing the family because my wife is really entrenched there. We've been there for 30 years. I want to leave. She wants to stay. She doesn't like that I'm finding problems with what he's saying and what he's doing. And I think my kids, we have just two left at home, will go somewhere else. But, you know, when they do decide to go somewhere else without us, that's going to cause division between my wife and I.
Right.
But it's better for my son to receive the way he desires.
How old is he?
He's 16. He was the first one in our parish to start receiving healing on the tongue.
Okay.
So my question is, unity in the family with this kind of nonsense, I'll call it, or pushing my kids out of the parish to another parish, and I support my wife and go with her and then go with them, but it's still going to cause division. I'm calling you because I've talked to, you know, numerous guys that I trust and respect, and everyone's all over the place. And I wanted to get one more opinion because I'm still not sure what to do.
I can hear the pain in your voice. So I'm sorry to hear that this is happening the way it is. God bless that young man of yours, that he is so attentive to how he receives the sacraments. Would that most 16-year-olds were like that. But that being the case, obviously it seems to me that the big issue here is your relationship with your wife. And I wouldn't want to recommend anything that would injure that. But at the same time, I wonder if there's a way to accommodate what you're concerned about, same with your son, and at the same time remain in union with your wife by going to that parish. Is it possible that even if she doesn't want to uproot the parish, uproot from the parish, could you and your son go to another parish for Mass maybe once a month or every other week? I mean, would that be a compromise that she might consider, even if you remained registered at the parish where you're having the problem?
Well, that's kind of where we're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time I can get my kids to go anywhere else, I do. But then he's receiving on the hand, and he just doesn't like... He's the first one to know, or, you know, to kneel and receive on the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he has this Catholic sense about him.
Yeah, we don't want to let that... We want to foster that, right? You want to keep that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you should. You should do that. Now, is your wife not as, I don't know, I don't want to say not as Catholic, but I mean, is this not as much of a concern for her about how to receive the sacraments?
No, not at all. Okay. Not at all. She's a very faithful Catholic, but she was Lutheran. She became Catholic. She believed in the real presence before I did as a cradle Catholic. Mm-hmm. So she does believe. It's just all these things just don't bother her. You know, the church says it's okay, so it's okay.
Right. And is the priest, do you get the impression that the priest is changing or doing these things to drive people away? Or has he always been talking and saying things like this?
He's always believes things different than the Catholic Church teaches, I think.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he wouldn't be, because he spends a lot of time in his homilies.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm most confident because I've heard him say a few things that are in contradiction.
His way of looking at things is contrary to the church, and it sounds as though he's probably, if he refuses to give people communion on the tongue, then he probably has an animus, it would seem, against maybe more traditional forms of Catholic piety. Maybe not just communion, but there may be other things that he would poo-poo.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a Vatican, from his own mouth, he's a Vatican II priest.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to guess, before we go on, I'm going to guess that he's at least 70 years of age. Is that right?
No, he's in his 60s, but he's in the same...
Interesting.
In here... In North Carolina, 70 down to 55, 60, that range has all been trained so poorly.
Well, here's what I would suggest, Bob. I want to recommend only things that would help preserve unity with your wife. So if there's a creative way for you and your son to avail yourselves of a more traditional parish and not, you know, this not cause a further rift with your wife, I would propose doing whatever you can in that regard. If that's not possible, then obviously that's the question you have to ask yourself. Is there a risk that your marriage could be damaged if you say, well, honey, I just can't take this anymore, and I'm going to go to that parish over there. If you want to continue going here, that's fine. But for the time being, I need my sanity and you need your sanity. So let's do this and maybe test drive it and see how it goes. Now, that may not be acceptable in the long run, but that's another possibility. If she's not willing to, you know, accommodate every so often, maybe every other week or something like that, then that might be the next step. Would be to propose that you just go to separate parishes. And I've actually known people who have done that. I never thought it would be a good idea, but in some cases, I've actually known some couples where they've done that for similar reasons, and it has worked out. It's not ideal, but each gets what they need. And I can see where, even though it might be a somewhat cumbersome arrangement, it might be the solution. Until your son is old enough to say, well, thank you, Mom, but I'm going to go to Mass over here. And that's not too far away. You know, he'll be 18.
Yeah, well, so. He's now 16. He's 16 and he has mm-hmm. his license.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind going to two masses on a Sunday.
Yeah.
So and, I can accommodate that. But, and I think my wife would be okay with it. But at some point, it's.
You want to be united in the same church.
Yeah.
Right. I understand. Well, this may be where some evangelization for her will take place. By you and maybe your son, where you can share with her some resources about the beauty of the more traditional. And I'm not necessarily talking about the traditional Latin Mass. I'm just talking about more traditional Catholic piety. And she wasn't raised with that. So in a way, you can't blame her because she didn't grow up with those things from her childhood. I did. So it means a lot to me. And I think that's one reason why. So I don't fault her for that. She just never got it. And so
But the issue is her group of friends is very narrow, and it will remain narrow because she's a really big introvert.
Okay.
And none of them, she won't listen to me because every attempt I've made has been pretty clumsy and bad. So she'll never hear these things unless it's through someone else that she doesn't know right now, which right. might happen.
Well, let me let you in on one of my secrets. I've used this many times over the years, and that is, if you read the second half of the Book of Acts, chapter 8, you see a story there where God sends Philip to minister to the Ethiopian eunuch, and I'm sure this will ring a bell for you, but here's the deeper meaning, I think. He sends him to minister to this Ethiopian eunuch, and there's a conversion that takes place, and it's miraculous. And then as soon as that takes place, then Philip goes somewhere else by God's direction. So for me, that's always been a reminder to pray for the Lord to send a Philip or Phillips into the lives of somebody, into the life of somebody who needs to hear something but won't hear it from you. Very often people will hear it, but they hear it from somebody else. And isn't it strange that the people closest to you in your own family or your own husband or wife, sometimes they won't hear it from you, but they might from a total stranger or some guy on the radio or, you know, some other person. So that's another prayer intention you could bring to bear here, that even though she may not hear the message from you, somebody's out there and God will send that person to her. So that's another possibility. I think it works. I've seen it work before.
That's a great, great thought. Thank you.
I hear the pain in your voice and I commiserate with you. And I will pray that things get better sooner. And in the meantime, that they certainly don't get any worse. That'll be my prayer.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome, Bob.
I do.
Maybe call me back in 6 months and let me know how this turned out. I'll be very interested.
I will.
All right. Thanks, Bob. God bless you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Al in Johnston, Rhode Island. Good morning, Al.
Hi, Pat. Good morning. My question to you, mm-hmm. it happens to me a lot when I do my daily rosary. At times I find myself dozing off, and at other times as I'm doing it, Patrick, I'm like thinking about my day. You know, what am I going to buy at the store? What do I need at the store? What am I going to do after work? And my question, is that a sin? How does the Blessed Mother look at that? How does Jesus look upon that? Are they frowning upon me? Is it a sin? So if you could give me some insight on that.
Okay, so you're talking my language because I have the same problem, and
Does it happen a lot to you?
Well, the older I get, quite frankly, the more it happens. But I would say it happens even with the best of sermons. And I go to a great parish where the sermons are always great, and they're Dominican friars, so they're trained in how to give a good sermon. And I find myself too. I mean, there are times when even if it's a powerful sermon, 5, 10 minutes into it, I feel like I want to just close my eyes and go to sleep. It has nothing to do with what the priest is saying. So we're human. This is my point. We're human, and we have to contend with our human frailties, including distractions, and if you're sleepy. These are all aspects of being human, and God understands that. And I would draw your attention to when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane, in his agony before he began his passion, or that was the beginning of his passion. And what do we see there? He asks Peter, James, and John to come with him and to stay with him and watch with him while he's praying and preparing for the ordeal. And we're told that they fell asleep. Now, maybe you can put yourself in that situation and say, well, I'm like those apostles. And what did Jesus do? He didn't jump all over them. He didn't rebuke them. He didn't say, you sinners. He didn't say anything like that. He just asked them a question. Couldn't you stay awake with me for 1 hour? And the apostles were sleepy. So I think that maybe the answer to your question is found there, because we see that the Lord's reaction isn't one of righteous indignation, but sort of like, come on, guys. You know, couldn't you have put a little effort into this? Couldn't you have been a little more attentive? And I have a feeling that's probably how God looks at you and me and everyone else who has distraction in prayer. It's good, and it's advisable to work at it and push yourself and to stay vigilant. What does Jesus say? He gives us another example about the virgins who are waiting for the wedding party. There are two forms of the story. One is where they don't have enough oil in their lamp, some of them, and so they have to go into town and get more oil. Another version of the story is where they fall asleep and the wedding party comes in and the doors get shut and they're left out. So there's an emphasis here, I think, about pushing yourself and trying to avoid the distractions and the fatigue and things like that. And that's the other part of this. It's not as though, oh, Jesus understands and everything's fine. I think, no, we should rouse ourselves and push ourselves to not be giving in to our bodily need for sleep or boredom or distraction. Try as hard as we can to push those things aside. Now, let me give you a resource that I think will help you out. It's by St. Teresa of Avila, and it is called The Interior Mansion. And it's all about prayer, and it's all about how to become good at praying and to move from the shallow waters of prayer, saying the rote memorized prayers, as good as they are, and I don't ever suggest we stop saying them, but to move beyond that into meditation, which is, you might say, the middle of the pool where it's deeper, but it's not the deepest end. The deepest end of the pool where you have the greatest depth of prayer and the most powerful prayer is the prayer of contemplation. Now, the analogy that she uses in this book, The Interior Mansions, is that each successive As you move in from the outside, each successive outer building that you move through has its own series of temptations and difficulties and obstacles, but she shows you how to overcome those. And that would include distraction and fatigue. How do you go past that? How do you go deeper and deeper and deeper? And she was a master at this. So I will defer to St. Teresa of Avila and let her teach you in her wonderful way in that book. And I think once you've read that book, it may not cure things immediately, but at least it's going to give you a plan of action and how you can measure your progress. How does that sound?
It sounds awesome. Yeah, you really shed it some light. I hadn't even been doing my rosary this morning, you know, the sorrowful mystery. The first one's the agony in the gut, and I totally forgot about that when his two apostles, you know, were sleeping.
Yeah.
And, you know, what Jesus said to him. And, yeah, that's like myself at times. fallen asleep.
Yeah. You know? And what does the Bible say? It says, arise, O sleeper. And I think that can apply to all of us, especially those of us who have a tendency to nod off. So yeah, those are all things I try to put in play for myself, Al. I hope they're helpful to you and everyone else listening. I'm going to take a quick break. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this.
It's wake up.
Programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Seriously, Cyrus, whenever I hear this song, the only thing I can see in my mind's eye is Bill Gates dancing awkwardly to this song.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, that is the image now for this song forever.
That's funny.
Yeah. We're going to go to the phones real quick, though, courtesy of PJ Media. Last December, a federal grand jury found 50-year-old Michael Harry guilty for his role in bombing the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center in Bloomington, Minnesota, back in 2017. He was convicted of civil rights violations and hate crimes. Today, Mike Harry now identifies as Emily Claire Harry, according to federal Minnesota Assistant Public Defender Shannon Elkins. Elkins alleges that Harry is suffering from gender dysphoria and says that absorbing right-wing anti-Muslim content online has resulted in an inner conflict that led to the attack. So the attack aside, he now identifies as a woman. If you see his picture, I think you'll find pretty quickly that he's a biological male. I actually wish he had changed his name not to Emily Claire Harry, but to Carrie Harry. That would have been at least, you know, a bright spot in this story. Carrie Harry?
He looks like that would fit his name, too.
Carrie Harry. Does that ring any bells?
Carrie.
There you go. There you go. Elkins recently filed court papers asking U.S. District Judge Donovan Frank to give Harry 30 years in prison rather than a life sentence that was sought by prosecutors. Elkins claims Harry brought military fatigues for his so-called missions. He also purchased female clothing for a planned trip to Thailand for surgery, and I won't explain why. He was living a double life. No one was killed in the mosque bombing. His two co-defendants have pleaded guilty and are also awaiting sentencing. Harry is a regular guy, looking to spend the next three decades in a women's prison. They're wondering, is this why he's changing his identity to Emily Claire Harry so that he can live in a women's prison, or is he, you know, what is his deal? I guess the question that they ask in the headline is this an example of toxic femininity? If he actually is a woman, which some people might believe that, and then assign him to a female prison, is that toxic femininity? Or what is that? And if they say, well, no, it's not toxic femininity. Come on. It's toxic masculinity. What are you talking about, toxic masculinity? He's a woman. I mean, he says he's a woman. We put him in with the women in that prison. We'll see how that works out. It's crazy. But it's the new world we live in. So please take note, Cyrus, because the rules change every so often. Let's go now to Teaneck, New Jersey, and talk to Mary. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Patrick. My grandmother had an arranged marriage. I don't think a lot of them worked out very well. Mm-hmm. She was 16 years old. I'm surprised the church married her at that age because she wasn't an adult. And I think she only married my grandfather because her parents told her to. I don't think she gave full consent of the will. I'm wondering if it was a valid marriage.
That's exactly what I was thinking about when you were asking me the question. Well, validity requires consent. And consent means that you freely enter into this marriage knowing that you're going to give yourself entirely to the other person. That includes in a bodily way with all that means. So if it, even though it's an arranged marriage, if she had no compulsion, in other words, she wasn't being forced into this marriage, and if she freely consented to it, even though, I mean, you would think that that would be not the right way to go about it, but if she freely consented to it and she entered the marriage, as the same would be true with the man, with those intentions, then I think it would be a valid marriage, all other things being equal, assuming there was no impediment in place at the time. But if she freely consented, that I think it would be valid.
Well, she told my father that she hated my grandfather all her life. I think she just married him because her mother ordered her to. And to me, that isn't right. That's not right. A marriage.
Well, in that case, it would be an invalid marriage on the face of it, because you can't be forced to receive a sacrament.
And right. Now, the church doesn't marry a 16-year-old girl today. They would marry a 16-year-old.
The code of
not an adult.
The code of canon law provides for marriage down to the age of 16. I don't have the code in front of me, but I believe it is 16, and it's either 15 for the girl and 16 for the boy, or it's 16 for the girl and 17 for the boy. But it is lower than what you would expect anyone to be getting married at.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
Bye bye.
So just to expand on that for a moment, keep in mind that in order to validly receive a sacrament and to validly celebrate a sacrament, one of the things that's required, certainly in a case like this, is intention. So if you are simulating, let's say, the sacrament of baptism, let's say that you're acting in a movie and your role is to play the priest and you're baptizing a baby and you say the words and you pour the water and all that, but you're not intending to baptize this child. You're just simulating this for the sake of a role in a movie. That's not a valid baptism. Even if you have valid form and water, I'm sorry, form and matter. So the matter is, in the case of baptism, the water, and the form is the pronunciation of the words, I baptize you in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. So when those two are in place, you have valid form and matter. But if you don't have the intention to baptize, and that's an example, then there's no valid baptism. So the same is true in the case of holy matrimony. So if you exchange vows and you exchange rings and the bride wears a white dress and they throw whatever, flower petals, they don't throw rice anymore, even if all the externals are present and both parties say, I do, if it's under compulsion, if it's due to fear or threats, if you don't marry my daughter, you know, that's the essence of a shotgun wedding. I remember when I was growing up, Cyrus, I didn't understand what shotgun wedding meant. I heard it from time to time, and I always thought it meant it's a very quick wedding. Like, you know, you have to get married quickly, like maybe she's pregnant or something. I always thought that shotgun had to do like with the speed of the wedding. And only later did I discover, I mean, it's a long time ago now, but when I was in my teens, I guess, I discovered that it's the father, in other words, figuratively holding a shotgun and saying, marry my daughter or else. Cyrus is nodding.
Yeah, I don't know what to add to that.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. So you have to be free, in other words. If you're not free, if you're forced or you're in some other way compelled, then it's not a valid sacrament. If somebody says, listen, you better get baptized or I'm going to kill you, and you say, I don't want to get baptized, I don't believe in Jesus or something like that, and you say, well, I'm going to kill you if you don't get baptized, or I'm going to fire you from your job if you don't get baptized. Well, I mean, even if you go through the motions of being baptized, it's not valid if you don't intend to receive the sacrament. So not to put too fine a point on it, but this is one of those details that we should be aware of. Let's go now to Paula in Vista, California. Hi, Paula.
Hi, how are you? Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Hey, I'm calling because we spoke once before. I'm a fairly new practicing Catholic, and there's a lot of controversy about end of times and revelation, and I came across a video by Michael Barber, and he has a book called Coming Soon.
Mm-hmm.
And before, I'm really cautious on, you know, where I get my education and what I actually read, because, you know, everything is
You're
so
smart to do that,
day.
By the way.
You don't know what to believe. Thank you. And, you know, before I even open this book and start to, you know, learn from it and stuff, I don't know if you have read it.
Well, I can save you the time and energy. Michael Barber's a good man. He's a very accomplished scholar. He's a faithful Catholic teacher. So I would give an unqualified thumbs up to any book that he's written. I know him personally. He's a very good man, and you can trust what he writes. I haven't read that book, but I don't need to give you an endorsement.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate
your
time.
Another writer who's in the same circle of scholars would be Brant Pitre, P-I-T-R-E. Brant is his first name.
Okay.
And he's actually a colleague of Michael Barber's, and they are sort of like the second generation out from Dr. Scott Hahn and his teaching. So I have very high regard for Scott Hahn as well. So these are men who have followed in his footsteps in their biblical studies, and they reflect a lot of what came before, but also a lot of new ideas on their own. So I would recommend both of them wholeheartedly.
All right. Thank you so much. I absolutely appreciate all of your input, and your show is amazing.
Thanks, Paula. I appreciate it. Well, let's move now to Emmitsburg, Maryland, and that's not far from the Gettysburg battlefield. I love going to both places. Let's go to Francis now. Hi, Francis.
Good morning. How are you, Patrick?
Doing well today. Thank you.
I wouldn't say that.
But you know, everybody does. Every single person does. So what can I say? It's okay.
Okay. I go to daily mass maybe twice a week if I can get there, sometimes three. I noticed 2 weeks ago a change in something that Father does when the consecration starts. He, instead of bringing the chalice and the paten to the altar separately, he is putting the water and wine in it with his back to us at the table, then bringing it up to the altar and going through the recitation. And then when it comes time to give communion, he calls somebody up from a pew, and they actually take the chalice, bring it down, and they give communion.
And what does he do when they're giving communion?
He is turning around with his back to us again and cleaning the chalice, the after communion little ritual they go through, cleaning the chalice and drinking whatever is in there. My problem with this is, other than the fact that nobody told us this, it just started, I can't receive communion, so he gives me a blessing. And if he is not down there, I can't get my blessing. I'm assuming, well, I know that a civilian cannot do it.
When you say get your blessing, you're not referring to the blessing that the priest gives to the congregation at the end of Mass, right? Are you referring to some other blessing?
No, I'm talking about a personal blessing. I am in a second marriage, remarried while I was away from the church. So without the annulment, which is not finished, I cannot take communion.
Mm-hmm.
So he gives me a blessing.
Are you living, I mean, this is a personal question, but since you're bringing this up, are you living with your current husband as husband and wife, or do you live as brother and sister?
No, it's husband and wife.
Okay.
Although we're in an age where it's pretty much brother and sister.
I get you. So here's my question. Why not just flip that switch, live as brother and sister, and do the right thing? And I know it's a sacrifice, but you can do it if you need to. And then you go to confession, then you can start receiving Holy Communion today. Why stay away from Holy Communion, where you're just one good confession away, get everything resolved, and then you live as brother and sister, and then who knows, maybe 6 months from now the annulment is granted. Maybe it's not, but maybe it will be, in which case then you can have your marriage blessed, and then you can live as husband and wife. But in the meantime, you're putting God first. Remember what Jesus said, put first the kingdom of God and everything else will follow. So my advice would be, I mean, not that you called about this, but this is a pretty big iceberg in the middle of this conversation here. So if you don't mind, I would just suggest, that's what I would suggest, just live as brother and sister, make that commitment. Don't do what married people do. Go to confession, make a clean breast of it, and then you can start receiving Holy Communion, and you don't have to be in this situation where you're going to Mass every time and not receiving our Lord. I'm happy to talk a little bit about the question that you asked me, but I think this has to be discussed as well. So, Francis, how about holding over the break, and I'll come back and we'll talk about what you're seeing at Mass. I'll give some thoughts on that. So thanks for standing by. I'll be right back. My number is 888-914-9149. If you need a second opinion, maybe you're looking for some answers, you can't figure out where to get them, call me, 888-914-9149.